670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Cowboys questions that matter after the final preseason game. By the way, coming up in about 20 minutes, we will talk Farmageddon with Brett McMurphy. We'll probably talk other college football things as well.
Are you excited? College football is on, is about to begin, really? I understand what this weekend was, week zero.
Yes.
But it's really about to start.
I'm super excited, and I'm really excited to talk to Brett McMurphy. But also, we have our in-house person who knows more about college football than I could ever conceive to know about anything.
What's his name?
That's Carter Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk with him tomorrow. Because he's like, I'll let Brett go first, and then I'll clean it up for him.
Oh, wow.
That's a quote that I made up. All right, so Cowboys questions that matter. By the way, in all sincerity, about Brett McMurphy coming up, man, he's got a bunch of fire quotes about the SEC expanding to 9 conference games and how the ACC responded. We will talk about one of them. Is just incredible.
Fascinating.
All right. Cowboys questions that matter. Both of you gentlemen, I would like you to weigh in. I would also like to hear from the fans. 877-881-1053, Franklin Frankel Injury Attorney text line. Do you have any issues with Micah on Friday night? Because I know I'm supposed to think it's the biggest travesty in the history of sports, and I can't quite dial up that enthusiasm or that anger for it. Do you guys have an issue with Micah Parsons from Friday night?
Other than he wasn't playing, no.
Okay.
Like, he got some nachos and laid down on a training bench.
Right.
Okay. Like, all right, let's move on to the season now. Let's get this thing
done.
Be
more angry.
And honestly, Kevin, it's two sides of this. If you think it's just one being greedy, there's no way that's the case in this whole situation.
Oh.
This is two sides having a problem coming up with a resolution to the conflict and not doing a very good job of communicating to each other on how to get this thing solved. So I don't have a problem with what's going on. It was a preseason game, and most of the guys didn't really care anyway.
Alec.
Except for the guys that were on the field, like they wanted to play, you know?
James Houston and cared.
Probably CeeDee Lamb, because CeeDee Lamb cares about everything.
That is true, man. You talk about, like, I know Michael Irvin is one of a kind. But if you talk about a receiver who also cares a lot about all aspects of the game and if everything is clicking right, CeeDee Lamb is that dude.
I agree.
Alec, do you care or are you upset with Micah Parsons from Friday night?
You know, Kevin, it's the only thing I wanted to talk about today for four
You're
hours.
Such a liar.
I'm just fed up. No, I really don't care. And I'm trying to remember who it was. It might have been Mike Leslie. It was somebody in the local media that was.
It
like,
was Mike Leslie,
You know, that was like, what, maybe 5-10 minutes kind of thing. Like, it wasn't even a majority. It wasn't even a quarter of the game that he was doing that. And, hey, to his argument, you know what his excuse for not practicing on a medical side has been?
Back.
Bad back.
Yeah.
You know what helps a bad back? Laying down. So if he wants to use that as his argument, who am I to deny it? I don't know if his back is actually hurting or not. Somebody that has a bad lower back speaking here. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Did you feel like Shoddy tried to undercut that part just a little bit when he goes, his MRI for his back came out fairly clean?
Yeah, he did. And look,
do MRIs now?
What's their success rate?
Yeah.
It feels like it's pretty high, right?
Sounds to me like a robot trying to do a human's job.
Oh.
You know?
And that scares me
I'm
now.
I'm not okay with that.
As of like 2 hours ago.
We'll get an update on that in the show, I believe.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, and I don't think it changes anything. I don't think it affects anything.
If he's doing that week one, though, I might have a problem.
Exactly. When the games matter, if he's not playing, when he should be playing, and he's just not locked in whatsoever, then I have a problem at that point.
Would you have Mozzie Smith on your 53-man roster?
No.
You answer that so fast.
I feel like you have the positions, you have the people to fill it. And Mozzie, there's just, if the reality of this defense is penetrate the offensive line, get into the backfield, wreak havoc back there, create lanes for your linebackers to go through without just being a hold 'em up guy.
Right.
Then Mozzie doesn't fit that for this team. If it is when he comes off the ball, he doesn't come off and fire a certain way that sure. I want to see. He looks strong, but that strength is slow. It's not a fast strength, and I just don't think that he fits what this defense needs. And it just hasn't changed or grown or developed from what we thought we were going to get when we drafted him.
Did you say groaned?
Groaned.
Okay. Oh. Alec.
It's not a word.
I should
unless
be.
You groan
would
in the past.
You have Mozzie Smith on your 53-man roster.
I mean, I will have groaned if he is on the roster. There you go, Corey.
have you prepared yourself mentally for the fact that, come on, dude, that's going to happen?
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I think they're kind of screwed at the position either way in terms of just run stopping. I think it's done for. Like, all things accounted for, they're not going to be a good run stopping
team. We haven't even started the season and it's done for?
I said run stopping. I didn't say the whole season. I just said run stopping itself. I think that's just a theme with this team. It feels like years over, a lot of teams have themes when it comes to certain areas, like one specific area. It's like no matter the coaching turnover or whatever, this team just sucks or they're really good at one thing, no matter what. And I think the Cowboys just for now are going to be a bad run-stopping team. So it's weird to say I don't really care. Like, I'd rather him not be on the team, but I don't think it really affects anything.
Bonus non-Cowboys question. What percentage, when you were growing up, of school dances were essentially themed A Night Under the Stars or some version of that? Because he's talking about themes.
Bonus question.
I feel like...
Why are you bringing this up?
I feel like every dance was like A Night Under the Stars or something like that. Like, for my senior prom, I was on student council, and they wanted to do like a... Like an Egyptian theme. I voted for that because I was like, man, that's totally different. But instead we came up with like A Night to Remember.
Night to Remember is the best, dude.
Stupid.
You don't want to forget those nights.
No, not at all.
Not if you're doing it right.
Okay. I feel like three of the dances I went to were A Night to Remember. A Night to Remember.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'll ask you a football question again.
I remember all of them.
Oh, my God. Alec, do you remember all the dances you went to?
Yeah, my prom was a Great Gatsby themed. I remember that. Mm. And then I went to one other social in like fifth grade.
You
and
wish they would have picked a better book.
Yeah, honestly. And the venue it was at fit, though, because it was old, super old, not very impressive. But yeah, I think like fifth, sixth grade, there was definitely A Night under the Stars kind of thing because I was on the committee for it. I remember planning it.
Sorry, Alec.
Yeah.
All right, next Cowboys question for you. All right, Alex says we should give up on our run stopping. It's not going to be good. I don't know if this question will fit. Do you think it's possible linebacker could be a strength of this team?
Yes, I do, actually. And I understand what he's saying because what we saw were a bunch of different guys trying to figure out if they're on this team. You know, and I think that maybe it could be a little bit better with some of your starters. That's what I'm hoping. But I do feel like you have better linebackers than you had last year. That's something that I'll say that I feel was improved this season. And if this defense, as we were just discussing, if they're disciplined in the way that they fill gaps, then I think they're going to do a fine job. But I have a lot of faith in the linebacking group this year, actually. I felt like they were light at that position last year, not just in the physical size of them, but in the amount of people. Their depth wasn't very good, and this year I feel like it's better.
I thought they did enough in the offseason on paper for it to be like a respectable group, but watching some of these guys play, I've actually felt like this is more than a respectable group. This is like a legit group of linebackers, at least on paper. And we talked about Maris Taliaferro all offseason, and I think he's only going to get better over time. But I do think the Kenneth Murray addition was underrated because I think that there's still a lot of untapped potential there. He hasn't been great in his NFL career, but he's got intangibles that can be worked around and that can be coached up to an even higher place. And then Jack Sanborn just being the perfect scheme fit for the Eberflus system and being successful just a year ago in that system, I do think it can be a strength of the defense.
And the bonus, this is going to be by far the best season of Damone Clark's career.
Hope so. Well, I mean, what we saw in the preseason,
so?
I don't think so. Because I don't know how they're going to use him, Kevin. I really do hope so, because if it is, dude, if he's plays the way that he did in the preseason and they convert that to regular season play, dude, we got studs back there then.
I felt like each of the past two seasons have been Damone Clark's year to figure it out and to get those reps and everything. So I'm scared. I'm a little gun shy to say, yeah, this is it. This is going to be the best. But I think the opportunities will be there for him. So I think he can maximize those. I think he's just going to get more chances to actually do what he's good at. And I think the preseason proved that. So I think this system is definitely going to benefit him. So I will cautiously be optimistic and say, yes, this will be the best year of Damone Clark's career.
Just, are you saying this will be the year that he puts it all together?
I think it is.
Right.
Just how important is Tyler Booker being good immediately to the success of this team?
Ooh. To the success of the team. I think it's, let's go with a number grade, a percentage here, Kevin. I'm going to say 70%.
See, and I think I would have it even higher, like 85. That feels like something that is vitally important.
I mean, if they can run behind him and feel confident running behind the two guards, man, you're going to feel pretty good. But a lot still weighs on your left tackle and who that's going to be, how good and productive they're going to be, and how that group works together offensively. But the rest, I mean, that defense, does that make sense? Like, I got to give 30% to the defense now too. But him being good immediately, I wonder how many games, Kevin, it's going to take you before you go, all right, we have officially replaced Zach Martin.
Oh,
because this is a guy that, like,
I just say we have a really good right guard? Like, that feels like an impossibly
high standard. Full season, though, if he goes through and you're like, dude, he replaced Zach Martin.
If he is an all-pro as a rookie, then I will be okay. Like, well, hell yeah.
All right, there you
go. Second team is just fine.
Just as long as it's all-pro.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, I made the Pro Bowl. Neat. All right, Alec, just how important is Tyler Booker being good immediately to the success of the team?
I think it is important. I don't want to levy expectations on him, but I think it would be important because we talk about how many running backs this team is probably going to carry and none of them wow you. So if you're going to be rotating, if you're going to have situational play calling built around certain players, I would want some consistency along the offensive line. And on top of that, people started to annihilate Tyler Guyton last season, especially across the offseason, because he wasn't Pro Bowl status day one. And I think that's unfair, but it's going
to
happen.
Which we tried to warn people about, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we tried to tell people that that wasn't going to be the case.
And with any other team in the league, that isn't the case.
Yeah.
But with this team, because of the expectations the team levies on their draft picks, it's going to happen. So just for his mentals, I think it's probably a good thing that that happens.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next from On3 Sports, it's America.
670 The Score's Mullinghaw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mully and Haas Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is college football insider Brett McMurphy right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan. Right now from On3 Sports, it's America's College Football Insider, Brett McMurphy. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you very much for jumping on with us. I know it was just the first game, but how important was Farmageddon and that outcome considering Iowa State and Kansas State? They were two of the favorites, if not the two teams, predicted to meet in the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the Big 12 got rid of the preseason media poll, so I asked each of the 16 coaches to anonymously predict what two teams they thought would meet in the championship game, and Iowa State and Kansas State received the most votes. Actually, Kansas State received the most votes to win the title, so certainly Kansas State's not eliminated by any means, but it's huge for Iowa State. And, you know, certainly puts them a leg up now. And, of course, any tiebreakers down the road, they have that head-to-head. But I thought it was very impressive. You know, everyone knows or should know how good Rocco Beck is at quarterback. He certainly proved that. And, you know, they have a big game against Iowa coming up. If Iowa State can beat that, certainly they could, you know, creep up the rankings. And I think the biggest thing for the Big 12 is no matter who the top team is or the top two teams are, you know, for the sake of the Big 12, hopefully they can distance themselves from the rest of the conference because, you know, look, I think we're going to have a logjam at the top of the conference. And when I say the top of the conference, I mean the top 14 or 15 teams.
Right.
That's how deep it is. So if the Big 12 wants to get two in the college football playoff, they need whoever those top two teams are to get the double-digit wins and separate from the rest of the pack, because if not, I'm afraid, like last year, the Big 12 will only get their champion in the playoff. But great start by Iowa State, and obviously, you know, Kansas State, they're not out of it, but you never want to start with a loss.
Hang tight with us for just one second. We're going to try to reconnect with Brett McMurphy. And then, obviously, the other thing for Kansas State, not only did they lose, afterwards, just the weird fight with the Kansas State quarterback, Avery Johnson, his dad.
Yeah, what a weird thing happened here.
Okay, and his brother, and they released a joint statement after it happened, but just like, I don't know how that happens. I guess one would assume maybe alcohol and the passions of sports, especially college football. Man, that might be a question for another day. All right, we've got Brett McMurphy back. Sorry about that. Just wanted to reconnect. The aftermath of that game with Avery Johnson's dad and his brother, that feels like a unique scenario right there.
Yeah, it's unique. I mean, again, everyone loves it on Twitter, but what does that mean for the Kansas State moving forward? Absolutely nothing. I'm sure that's not the first time something like that's happened.
Right.
But now with everybody having a camera phone, it's going to blow up. But it's not a good look, certainly. But, you know, I'm guessing that won't be the last or the worst thing we see that happens after a game between fans
right.
or fan bases. So it's only week zero.
do you think
for week one?
Yeah, we were just talking about this, and I know it could be the combination of passionate fans. I'm sure alcohol works into some of these situations. Do you think college football has like the most combustible fans?
Oh yeah.
Yes, but I'd put an asterisk by soccer fans that literally throw smoke bombs onto the field.
That's a very fair point.
Yeah, we don't have fences around the fields yet for college football games. But certainly, look, that's why I love college football. And that's why I hate that college football is becoming more like the NFL. And I'm not talking about playing players. I'm just talking about the rules regarding the timing plays. And they want the game to continually speed up and 2-minute warnings and all this. I don't want another I don't want NFL life. I love the college game for all the oddities and weird stuff that you mentioned. Don't change that, or I think we lose a lot.
Now, I know a lot of people are talking about the SEC expansion to the nine conference game schedule. But what I want to talk about is the quote that you got from an ACC AD. I'm going to read the quote and you tell me if that sounds correct and what you think about that. So the ACC, it's mathematically impossible for a 17-team ACC to play 9 league games. So how are they going to figure it out? And you had an AD tell you, we have the highest rated academic schools of any Power 4 conference. We'll figure it out. Does that sound right? And how do you suppose they'll figure it out?
No, that's an accurate quote. I mean, I quoted him accurately, and it's kind of like a smug flex by the ACC.
For sure.
Saying we're smarter than you, and you know what? They are. So whether that translates into a national championship this year in football, we'll find out. But certainly, hey, the ACC can flex their brains as much as possible. There's some challenges on figuring out what you want to do because, yeah, you can't have 17 teams play 9 games because the math doesn't work. One way that you can do it is have 12 of the 17 play 9 games and then the remaining five conference teams play 8 games. And then for their 9th conference game, ACC plays 5 games a year against Notre Dame. You have the game against Notre Dame count as an ACC game in the league standings. That way you can get the 9 for everybody. Obviously, that's not going to be equal for everybody. That's one way to do it. You could actually have, is it fair? Yeah, well, it's when you have 16, 17, 18 team conferences, the schedules are never fair anyway. But that's one way to do it. That's the easy way to do it. Will they end up with that? I don't know. Like I said, they already play Notre Dame 5 games a year. You just simply count that game against Notre Dame as a league game because, remember, the COVID season, Notre Dame was a quasi-ACC member that year.
Right.
So that's one way to do it. The difference between the SEC and the ACC going to 9 is the SEC going to 9, they add more value to their media rights deal because they're adding another conference game that ESPN did not have. By the ACC doing that, yes, they add another conference game. It doesn't have the same amount of value as the SEC game. Sorry, ACC fans, that's the reality of it. But if you add the Notre Dame game counts as an ACC game, that adds value, right? Actually, it doesn't because those games are already scheduled. So you're not adding additional games against Notre Dame. You're just simply calling it something different. So that's why it's not 100% sure on how the ACC will get to this 9-game format. But the good news is, by doing this, we're certainly a step closer to having a 16-team playoff. If the Big Ten will come off their I'm going to die on this hill and require automatic qualifiers, then I think we'll get to a 16-team playoff in 2026.
Ooh. Talk with Brett McMurphy right here on 105.3 The Fan. Do you think if you crack the ACC formula for the schedule and getting more media rights money, they will let you into their brain trust of intelligence?
No, I'm an Oklahoma State grad, so I wouldn't qualify, and I admit that openly. But, I'd appreciate it. Maybe they'll make me an honorary.
Oh, ACC, yeah, an emeritus. Yeah.
Academic honoree or whatever they call it. Sure.
Now for the SEC, in addition to the 9-game conference schedule, also next year, SEC teams required to have at least one non-league power conference opponent. This feels like a little bit of a shift or am I off on that?
No, it is. And that's the thing. I was at SEC media days, in Atlanta. I was in Big Ten media days in Las Vegas, and every Big Ten coach, it's literally like they had an implant in them where you press the button and they all said the same thing. Well, we played 9 games and the SEC only plays 8. So why would we want to do the college football playoff the same as them? Yada, yada, yada. Well, the SEC said, okay, we'll take that nonsense and we'll trump you by not only are we going to play 9, but now we're going to require our teams to play a 10th conference game. No, you're right. It's different. It's huge. And also if the SEC does this, now you force the Big Ten to do it because the Big Ten's been belly aching about the conference schedules are different. So now that the SEC is saying, okay, you want us to play 9? We're not only going to play 9, we're going to play 10. So I think the Big Ten will then follow suit. And then I also think the Big 12 and the ACC will follow suit. So then we'll have the four power conferences all playing 10 power league conference games. Now what will be fascinating to see is what does Notre Dame do? Look, Notre Dame's isn't being forced into a conference. They will stay an independent until the end of time. I truly believe that. But will Notre Dame feel pressure to have to schedule 10 power conference opponents? Because right now they don't do that. Certainly they won't be forced to do that by the playoff. That will be a choice by them. Because, of course, they only have
670 The Score's Mullin Haugh is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haugh Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Play 12 games and never have to play a conference championship game.
How much trouble is Frank Reich in Stanford after losing that? Or is it just that weird things happen in Honolulu? Is that how it goes?
He's done after this year. That's, okay. That's how much trouble he's in. But this is a one-year deal anyway. So he's a placeholder, if you will. Andrew Luck made that clear. I talked to Frank at ACC spring meetings, and he's like, yeah, this is a one-year deal, came in to help Andrew and help Stanford. And tough loss for them. They had the game won, and they're running the ball down Hawaii's throat, and then they throw a little pass and it's intercepted and everything changes. But Frank's not there long term, so the old adage, you can't fire me, I quit. He's done after this season, no matter if they would have went 12-0 or 0-12.
It feels natural that all of us will maybe have a more vested interest in North Carolina football than usual. Yeah. I know you're locked in on all the programs, but I'll admit I am more interested in North Carolina football by far than usual. And then we get news this morning that they will also be the focus of a Hulu show as we go along the way during the season. What are realistic expectations, I guess, for the Tar Heels?
Well, to put it in perspective, I think their projected win total is like 7.5. So basically, the experts are saying they'll win between either 7 or 8 games. I think that's realistic. I actually don't think they're going to win 8 games. I think they'll win below 7. They'll win 7 or fewer games. To put it in perspective, TCU opened the year as a 3-point underdog against North Carolina because of a lot of the hype surrounding Bill Belichick. And now, as we get closer to kickoff, TCU's now, I think, a 3.5-point favorite.
Wow.
So I think people have looked a little bit closer at the rosters and what exactly is going on there. And, look, it's going to be different but similar to the, car wreck, like, can't take your eyes off Colorado situation with Deion in year one.
Yeah.
With Belichick in North Carolina. And so, whether you can say they were relevant before or whether they're relevant now, I don't know. But certainly they're going to be must-watch TV to see what happens with Belichick at the college level. But I just think, with the additions they made, I don't see them getting to double-digit wins. I don't see them as a college football playoff team. I think they're going to be somewhere around 500. But still, like Colorado was Deion's first year when they won 3 games. They were the most talked about 3-win team in the history of college football.
Right.
North Carolina's probably going to be the most talked about, 500 team in college football this season.
Well, there's a reason you're America's College Football Insider. Thank you very much for all of the info. We would love to have you on again anytime.
Hey, you got it, guys. And I'll let you know when the ACC puts me in that academic.
Thank you very much, good sir. Brett McMurphy, potential ACC emeritus from On3 Sports right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're the KNC Masterpiece, and I know you have been waiting for this. If you've been listening to this show, It's time for Gridiron Gravy. And this is why you don't call him Penix.
Okay.
Next on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan right now. What say we go around the entire NFL and dip into some Gridiron Gravy?
Dip it and rip it.
Let's go to cut number 15. We're going to start with this. For many, many, many months, if not now more than a year, y'all have attempted to call Michael Penix Michael Penix. My name is Michael Penix.
Yeah, I don't think there's any audio of me saying it, but there is definitely audio of you saying it right there.
There should be. So that was me saying if he ever comes out and says that's his name, then we'll do that.
Allegedly.
We're going to play an audio clip where you can decide, does that Cowboys fan yell Penix? Does he yell penis? One or the other. But Michael Penix is not having it. And listen to this audio, because first of all, it's fun. Second of all, listen to how quickly he backtracks with realizing that that guy heard him.
Hey, Michael Penix! Let's go, bro! Hey, have a good season, bro. Yeah, have a good season. Huh?
What'd you throw me?
I said Michael Penix.
So I think he says Penix. I think he's a Tolo. But also, as soon as he looks over at him, he goes, hey, have a good season, bro. And like, yeah, because he's funny. Like, hold on, I'm sitting at field level. That person can come over to me. Like, it's a lot easier to say whatever when you're like, what is that guy going to do? High jump 10 feet up in here? I don't think so.
I still am very fascinated. I need somebody to tell me what happened immediately after.
Yeah.
Because the simple fact that he stopped and walked over and said, hey, what did you just call me? Like that, I like it. I appreciate Michael for doing that. But I want to know, did he say, don't ever say that again?
Right.
Or did he say, that's actually pretty funny. I've never heard that before.
All right.
Which would be insane to me.
I do think I might have to concede the point if he is like, you know what? You can call me that. That's pretty funny. Then I'd be like, oh, but dip.
I also wonder too, because of what recently happened with the news station on the TV.
That probably didn't help.
I wonder if that's like amplified this and made him not like it more. And that could be problematic.
Michael Penix Jr. I don't know why only I have the drops. That was what
they
did.
You're the only one that says it.
Mm-hmm. Lies. Lies!
877-881-1053. If you've ever heard anybody but Kevin
I
say
swear
it that
to
way.
God, I know we like doing bits in the fan text. Tell the truth, fan texters. Tell the truth! All right. Let's go from that to the Eagles. So the Eagles let Fred Johnson, the offensive tackle, move on down the road, and he went to Jacksonville. And then Jacksonville was like, I'm a pass on that. They traded him back to Philadelphia for a 2026 seventh round pick. Is that a huge transaction? No, I just thought it was kind of funny.
I like Ross Tucker, our friend Ross.
Yes,
he's.
Although sometimes I think he does not like
it. Yeah, he's very adamant that Howie Roseman can't stop, won't stop trading. And like that is what he does. He just moves the roster around. Bill Parcells said that. You know, I think a lot of people in your fantasy leagues do the same thing, right? Where you're just like, I'm just constantly milling the bottom of my roster, trying to find somebody
Which
who has
not
a hot
bad
hand
at all.
And that's what he does, man. And he's good at it. And that's the difference between them and other franchises. And I won't say which ones.
He means the Cowboys.
Only call him
shut
only
up.
Kevin is
shut
calling
up,
that.
Fan text.
You can't handle the truth, comma Kevin. Only
Frankel
time I've ever
Frankel.
Heard his name is from Kevin.
Injury attorney text line.
Until I hear a drop of Corey saying it, it's all hearsay. Kevin's the only one.
This is a den of lies. The Twitch and the YouTube as well. Den of lies. Charlatans, all of you, for not admitting the truth. Can't trust a guy who leaves his car unattended while gassing it up. You know what? And I did that again the other day for the first time in a long time. I'd fallen in line with what you guys said about just standing there to gas up my car.
In the C block today, that comment will be very prevalent.
Oh, okay.
If I use that word correctly.
I don't know if you did. All right, let's
relevant.
Okay, Let's go to spare quarterback talk. Because you might be like, oh, you got a story? I got three. So
it's definitely not the right word.
Yeah, I was like, The Vikings traded Sam Howell to the Eagles because they're like, well, he sucks. And then they signed Carson Wentz, who probably sucks, as J.J. McCarthy's backup. So that's spare quarterback story number one. Let's go from that to Aiden O'Connell, who is going to be the backup for the Raiders. He is getting surgery on a fractured wrist. Looks like he's probably going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. And then still one of my favorite stories of the offseason is Kellen Moore, almost instantaneously, one would imagine, regretting his decision to take the Saints head coaching job as Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler was there for the taking. And neither one of them wanted to take it. They were a very underwhelming 17 of 28 for 155 yards. And of course, no passing touchdowns.
Wow.
So although Shuck did run for a touchdown, and Kellen Moore said after the game, they will start making their quarterback. They will make their starting quarterback selection at, I'm going to say the words, but I'm going to say it in how I interpret it. At some point this week, I guess. He didn't say I guess, but the rest of it is accurate. At some point this week, after they reviewed the tape, had discussions, and then what Kellen Moore was thinking probably is, and realized we have no other options but to pick one of these jabronis.
Or player coach.
I would love to see it. A million percent.
We saw it with Peyton Manning.
I would rather see Kellen Moore play quarterback for the Saints than either one of these two. 1,000,000%.
He's out there. He's not wearing pads, though. He's dressed as a coach playing quarterback.
Yes.
And you're just like, what? Why does he? He's like, no, that's how good he is. He knows all the plays.
Honestly, now that's all I want to see. All right, let's go to, well, not the best weekend in the world for the Sanders family. Let's go to Shedeur Sanders, who completed 3 of 6 passes for 14 yards. It appeared as though he was limited by his oblique injury.
Oh.
Then he got taken out with about 2 minutes in the game when he thought he was going to go back into the game. And Stefanski could have said it was his oblique, but he confirmed that Shedeur Sanders was not removed for health reasons.
Oh, no. So,
at a time.
What's the problem?
He just wasn't playing well.
No.
At a time when in a preseason game, he could have been like, yeah, we want to protect him with the oblique. He was like, nope, that is not why we took
you
him
really
out.
Really could have seen the kid run through the 2 minute drill.
Yes.
And like experience that whole thing for him, which is important.
And if you see the video on the sideline, he was stunned that he was not going back in the game. But not the worst of the Sanders family this weekend. Unfortunately, Shiloh Sanders decided to throw a punch. Go ahead and give me cut number 16, and then we'll talk about the aftermath.
Sanders, right there, and a shove back.
That's not going to be good
for either one of them.
That is a great point. So Shiloh Sanders ejected from the game, and then ejected from being part of the Bucs franchise for now.
Oh, no.
As they went ahead and waived him because he was undrafted and is punching people.
But he was showing some fight.
He was showing some fight. It's tough to balance the right amount of fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I feel like I fall in that category sometimes, not in terms of physical, but in terms of my thoughts, that I balance between what an employee that cares a lot between that guy's an ass.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that is a delicate balance.
Kind of like the practice we were out there and they were like, next person that throws a punch, you're done with practice for the day. And then the next person threw a punch. We were like, all right, is he really done for the day? And
yes.
Like, we'll see.
Yeah. I understand that. I really, really do. All right. Let's go from that to, it was also a tough weekend for the Bengals. Because the Bengals are having a Ring of Honor ceremony. And the word circulating is that multiple Bengals legends have been told that, hey, we'd love to have you there as long as you pay for your flight and hotel. And you'd think like, oh, maybe that's just like one or two players. And then Boomer Esiason went on his radio show, and you know he knows about things that aren't right. And he said that that was true, that the Bengals said, hey, we'd love to have you out here if you can pay for your hotel room and flight.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Would you do it?
No.
Or would you be like,
no.
Okay. You're getting honored for something at Duke.
No, if I'm the person getting honored, but I'm saying like even the people who
you're
were
just
there
invited.
Yeah, yeah. Like how much does this suck for? Well, I know Darren Woodson like lives around here, but if it was like one of those Cowboys legends is like, hey, we're doing the triplets Ring of Honor. So you might want to book. I don't know if you like American, like whatever, pay for your stuff. And you're like, wait, what?
Don't, I mean, it seems like all Cowboys just stick around DFW and live here. They don't stick around Cincinnati and live there.
No, because they also think that chili is overrated.
What's Boomer doing? Like, he doesn't want to honor the city?
Hey!
And stick around?
Boomer is fighting crime from the radio booth where he's like, this dude right here, he's stealing and selling tickets. You got to put him in the clink. That, look it up! That's what happened!
It did happen.
I don't think Boomer was the informant, but the rest of that story is accurate, and that is what happened. Okay, by the way, one more quick question. Maybe we discuss this later. So Terry McLaurin signs today, 3 years, up to $96 million. Do you look at 13 days and you're like, that should be fine, and he should be, for a veteran, he should be good to take the field?
Yeah, he was for the open. He was around the last week or so because he was like, look, if I really want to be ready for this, I need to go ahead and start the process of it. So, yeah, I think for the season opener, he will be available for Washington. Maybe not completely full, like as in like there, maybe the reps will be just a little bit less, but he should be, I mean, reasonably ready to go.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, the Rangers make positive history, but nothing is ever that simple with this team. Next on The Fan.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.